Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My next guest is Mr. Guy Mitchell. Guy Mitchell is a member of the Phi Tau Sigma, the International Honor Society for Mechanical Engineers, and was elected to Distinguished Engineering Fellow by the College of Engineering, University of Alabama in 1995. His book, Global Warming, The Great Deception, explains what he believes to be the flawed claims of global warming caused by human activity. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. I'm fine. I hope you are.
I am, and thank you for the interview. But I would be remiss if, in the face of what this country and the world is facing right now with the heat, that is really, you know, unprecedented. To ask you, how can you believe that, you know, and I'm an old guy. I've been around. I'm 68 years old. And so I remember some things and some times. But as hot as things are right now, I don't remember them in my lifetime. You don't believe that global warming is real?
No. And I'll tell you why I don't. And by the way, I think a lot of people share your opinion and concerns, and I understand that. I think it's important to distinguish between weather and climate. In my book, I make two points. Well, I make more than two, but I make two fundamental points about the flawed science, the pseudoscience that's used in the fraudulent global warming hypothesis. The first one is that if you look at the world's temperature databases, they're maintained by NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, for the lower atmosphere, which is the first 8 kilometers of the Earth's atmosphere, the world's oceans, and the landmass. You see there's been virtually no global warming since the measurements, accurate measurements, were begun with satellites in 1979. So the database refutes the allegation that there's been global warming. And that's the most important thing to understand. The second thing is if one analyzes the fraudulent global warming hypothesis that's put forward by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, and you look at the physics of what happens when a CO2 molecule absorbs a long-range infrared photon that's emitted from their surface, you see that the downwelling heat flux, that the heat that is returned to Earth by the addition of 120 parts per million of CO2 concentration, is de minimis. It is noise in the system. And so the science, the analytics using thermodynamics, spectroscopy, quantum mechanics, atmospheric physics, refutes the concept. And then the database disproves the claim. So the truth of the matter is we have had historical periods when it's been this hot. I was reading the other day, and I've not done the research on this, but I think there was a heat wave in Europe back in 2009. So I think it's just the fact that the media is focusing on it. I think certain politicians are focusing on it, and they're confusing short-term weather effects with a longer-term change in the temperature databases of the Earth's biosphere.
So I clearly am not going to possibly sit here and have a conversation with you about something I'm not equipped to have from the standpoint of whether or not global warming is real. But I will say that for every person who believes that global warming is not real, there are also scientists who will refute the information that you just said.
Oh, there's no question, and that's part of the issue, and it really goes back to the formation. Well, it goes back actually to the 1960s with a couple of scientists to, well, actually, there have been competing theories. One of the major proponents of the global warming hypothesis, named Dr. Steven Schneider, who passed away in 2010, and he has an impeccable academic CV. Dr. Schneider was a proponent of global cooling in the 1970s and predicted that we could have an ice age by 2020 and that the temperature of the Earth would, and there is no average temperature of the Earth, by the way, that it would drop by 6.5 degrees centigrade. And he later reversed his position and became an advocate of global warming. So there are certainly scientists, primarily those who are engaged in research and need the funding, who promote the fraudulent global warming hypothesis. There's no question. And a lot of them are resident in the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change. Conversely, those that are not dependent on research funding, who are distinguished scientists like Dr. Richard Lindzen, who was the MIT Sloan Atmospheric Physics Chair for 30 years at MIT, and plenty of others have said it's hogwash. So, you know, it just depends. Unfortunately, the issue's moved from being one of science to being one of a political
So again, you use the verbiage fraudulent, and so for every person and scientist that you can run off or talk about, the other side can ask questions that will lead people to the belief that there is something that is going on and that man is causing it. And for those of us who don't believe, so do you believe that man has done anything at all to impact and affect, excuse me, climate change in the world?
None whatsoever. And I use the term fraudulent advisedly. In a legal sense, it means an intent to defraud. And I'm of the opinion that there are many climate scientists, particularly resident in the UNIPCC, who know that the hypothesis that they put forward, that a CO2 molecule absorbs a photon, a long-wave infrared photon around 15 microns in wavelength, and then re-radiates that photon to the Earth's surface and heats the surface up, as the lawyers would say, they either know or should know that is, if they have any understanding of thermodynamics, they have any understanding of spectroscopy or quantum mechanics, they should know, and a lot of them don't, by the way, they should know that that's not so. And so anytime I tell you something that I know is not true, I am evidencing an effort to persuade you to a false truth, and that's the problem we have today.
Let's do this. Let's bring in Tom from LA. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people are the government ultimately, and we can never forget that. Number two, the Republican Party is the party of murder and pro-death. I'm sorry. Sir, you do exactly what it is on whether it's left or right all the time. And this is the problem that we have with money in politics. The problem we have with money in politics is the government cannot be trusted because of the fact that they're taking big money from these fossil fuel companies. And the thing is, you get a guy like this that comes on the air, he says the word fraud probably 12 different times in every little thing that he says. He does the talking points, which is really, really kind of cool, I guess, if you're into messaging. So I do bravo you for that, sir. I give you a compliment for that. But he's a quack. He's a fraud. Crazy. Like, the problem is scientist is science. And science can never be proven one way or another way, and that's one of the reasons why it is that people can't believe in things like climate change or viruses or whatever it might be, because it's always changing and things are always happening. It's also a way for people like the guests to be able to come on and say, I can say unequivocally that there is no climate change. I believe him a little bit more if he said, yeah, you know, I do believe in some things, that we have more people on the planet now. I do believe that the CO2 that we're emitting from the air is actually affecting climate change. Okay, I could go along with that. But the thing is, what these people do, just like the people that did with COVID, they say, oh, 100% sure this is what it is. And then you have a bunch of sheep that just follow them off a cliff. I want to tell you, sir, you may believe in what you are saying. And you may be also another, you know, grifter like Donald Trump or some of the other people that are taking money from the big billionaire class. But I'll tell you what, if you have any children, you should really, really search your conscience and wonder what the hell it is you're doing.
Hey, Tom, let's let him respond. Tom, let him respond.
Well, thanks for your comments, Tom. And half of what you just said make an important point in my book, and I want to come back to that. Now, I have 3 children and 6 grandchildren, so like anybody who has progeny, I have a vested interest in the thermal well-being of the planet. But unfortunately, you hit on an important point. It's got to be a political issue. It's been taken out of the realm of science. And if one looks at it, what I would submit to you is, if you buy a copy of my book, Global Warming, The Great Deception, it's on Amazon.com, and you read it, I think you, if you do it with an open mind, you'd be convinced that the case that I make for the science, based on first principles of science, proven principles of thermodynamics, spectroscopy, quantum mechanics, atmospheric, demonstrates that the CO2 molecule plays essentially no role in the moderation of the Earth's climate. It's all about water vapor. Water vapor is the greenhouse gas that is effective in doing that. So, but you're exactly right about this. If you want to understand the motivation behind the proponents of global warming, follow the money. You know, in the case of the UN, it's about funding. There's been $1 trillion spent on climate change research since the 1980s. About $5 billion a year spent on cancer. The UN has stated its intent is to address socioeconomic inequalities worldwide through the auspices of climate.
Guy, hang on a second. We've got to go to a break. Hang on a second. Tom, hang on.
Yeah, sure.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Guy Mitchell. Guy Mitchell is a member of Phi Tau Sigma, the International Honor Society for Mechanical Engineers, and was elected to Distinguished Engineering Fellow by the College of Engineering, University of Alabama in 1995. His book, Global Warming, The Great Deception, explores what he believes to be the flawed claims of global warming caused by human activity. And again, the operative words, what he believes to be. Connor, there's something, a question you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really a question. It was more like, I mean, I just went to NASA's website, and they say that 97% of all scientists agree that climate change is currently happening right now. And I do have a question. I mean, I was looking up some articles. I'm generally confused about what exactly quantum, or your point about water vapor, because water, like CO2, greenhouse, the entire effect that climate change is based on CO2, which is a chemical reaction, and water vapor is H2O, meaning it can't hold gases in the atmosphere. It's water. So, and I mean, there's unequivocal evidence that this is happening. So I just would want to know exactly what the intention is about writing such a book when 97% of all qualified governmental scientists disagree with you. What is the intention behind that?
Okay, good. I'm sorry I didn't get your name. Is it Connor?
Yeah, yes. Connor. Yeah.
Okay, Connor. Good questions. First of all, let me address the 97%. That statistic was a result of a citizen science project that a fellow named John Cook did back in, I think it was 2003. I reference it in my book. It's called Quantifying the Consensus in Climate Science. And they sent out 11,847 surveys to climate scientists who'd published about anything to do with the climate. And 66% of those who were surveyed didn't respond. 32% responded and said they thought man had caused climate change, and 1% responded and said they didn't know. So they divided 32 by 33, and they came up with 97%. As I point out in my book, when you go to the world's academic societies and scientific organizations, you find out there's far from a consensus. The Chinese don't believe it. The Russians believe we could have global cooling.
Yeah, I mean, of course the Chinese don't believe it because it's in their political interest to not believe it, considering how, like, them and India are the biggest exporters of CO2 in the entire world. I mean,
sure. So it's yeah. Like, and so, but I'll hasten to add, though, that both Oxford University, Cambridge University, the Royal Society, this was back in 2017 when I began this research, all had questions about it. Now, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but having questions there about it.
Let him respond, yeah, Connor. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, there are two what are called IR, infrared reactive gases. Well, there are more than two. There are five, but there are two main ones in the atmosphere. One of them is CO2, which has a concentration of 0.04%, and there's water vapor, which has a concentration of 2.5%. Even the proponents of global warming will admit that water vapor is responsible for about somewhere between 65 to 90% of the greenhouse gas effect because it absorbs a broader spectrum of long-wave infrared radiation. So CO2 plays a de minimis role. It's all about the water vapor. And even the proponents of global warming will tell you that. Now, they really exercise themselves to develop this concept that there are feedback loops where CO2 warms the troposphere and then there's more water vapor. But the bottom line is, if you look at the physics for gases that absorb infrared, long-wave infrared radiation from the Earth's surface, that CO2 plays a de minimis role. It's all about the water vapor, and water vapors are naturally formed. You know, it's a naturally formed greenhouse gas, and so is CO2, by the way, although there's an anthropogenic, a man-made component with respect to CO2 emissions from the combustion of fossil fuels. So, but I want to disabuse you of the idea that 97% of the world scientists do not believe man's caused global warming. That was a that was a very flawed study.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was checking the references for it, and it references a number of separate studies of separate organizations, and it's, you know, it's an average based on consensus. But that's beside the point. You know, when it comes to water vapor, I mean, that's the entire point of global warming, is that these human-made institutions, right, increase the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, right, which then causes that cycle, right, that you referenced earlier, to continuously happen, raising
the
temperature.
If that were the case.
So even if water vapor is natural, it's because of, and I mean, this is just proven on NASA's website. It says they have a graph. I mean, this is, I mean, what's humorous? I mean, I guess you can say that I can cross-check all sources, but then again, it's like, what's more logical? The fact that throughout the entirety of human history, right, CO2 has been at a certain specific level, parts per million. It looks like it's been beneath 300 parts per million. And then all of a sudden, right as industrialization happens, right, it skyrockets up because of the cycle. That's blatant evidence that it's human created. I mean, I can agree that there is debate and there is difference in opinion, but you said on air that there is no effect, which is just blatantly untrue. That's just not true whatsoever. I mean, even scientists agree with us being the cause of it, and they say, well, you know, human it's went to this level, right, CO2 at different parts in history before, like during ice ages or during certain cataclysmic events. But You can say that, but that also doesn't even address the point of industrialization caused this.
So, Connor, let's let him respond. Go ahead, Guy.
Let me ask you a question, Connor. Your point is that since 1870, let's say, the concentration of CO2
I'm talking about 1900s, like since the beginning of industrialization.
Well, no, I said 1870. Let's say the Industrial Revolution began around 1870. You pick the date. It doesn't make any difference. But usually the reference datum is 280 parts per million, which is about what it supposedly was.
So let's do this, Guy. I hate to do it, but we've got to go to a break. And can you hang on a second?
Sure.
All right. So we've got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You're tuned into the Erlingham
Show. Yeah, because I'd like to
address that. Yeah, we will. You will certainly get a chance to as soon as we come back.
Having a large concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, right, has effects on how on weather systems, has effect on climate in certain areas. It's not specifically to do with temperature, which is a point that me and you can agree with. So like even if I so that that wasn't even the point, that's a straw man argument there, because I wasn't arguing that like the increased temperature is the problem. And you're actually right in distinguishing between global warming, right, and climate change, right? But they're not two completely different things. They have an effect on one another, right? Because climate change, right, is the change of certain climates, which in certain climates, say like in Antarctica, for example, right, it's very cold. If that climate changes, let's say glaciers melt, that can raise the overall global temperature. It's an effect, right? But it isn't the main problem, which is climate change. And so that's one thing I'd want to say.
So let me ask you, Guy. President Biden is talking about executive action to address emergency action to address the issue. You think that that's unnecessary? Is it safe to say that?
Yes. The first thing before you respond to an emergency is to verify that there is one. I mean, at least most people would think that way. And I keep going back to the fact that the world's temperature databases do not indicate that there's been a warming of any of the components of the biosphere, the atmosphere, the land mass, or the oceans. And so, to declare war on the carbon atom, which has been our friend for millennia, and the fossil fuels, which have provided the standard of living for the world, not just the United States, but a third world countries that are developing that need electricity, need refrigeration, need air conditioning, to all of a sudden use pseudoscience. And I think an earlier caller made this point, and I make it in my book. When government uses pseudoscience to enact laws or regulations that are supposedly in the common good, but end up eroding personal freedoms, we all lose.
Okay, so
and that's an important point.
So let me respond to that, personal freedoms. And listen. So science moves forward, and the world moves forward, and somebody created, a plow. And so people use a plow with a horse to plant, vegetables. And we have now moved forward to the tractor. Nobody's going back to the plow. So my point is fossil fuels had their place and their time. But the world's not going back there. It is moving forward.
And one more thing. So I had looked up UAH, University of Alabama in Huntsville, and their map.
Temperature database.
Yeah, the temperature database. Yeah, and it says that ever since post 2016, right, there's been a point, about an average, about like a 0.4 degrees Celsius increase in the lower troposphere. And their base period is 1991
to 2020. That's 0.13, Connor, per decade. That's 0.13 per decade.
No, I mean, it's saying right on the graph that in 2016, right, which is 0.4.
Well, you're referencing degree, 1 year, but if you go back to the
degrees Celsius,
and
no, but if you go back to 1970, right, it was around, the temperature was around negative 0.4, and this is on the graph. I can even put it on Earl's screen so we can see it too, but I mean, this proves what we're talking, this is obviously like objectively a problem. Like it's objectively. I think that we should have debate.
Well,
about
I
how
disagree.
To fix the
it depends on
we
how
need to
you
focus
define
on how to
problem.
Fix the problem, but we need to at least agree that the problem exists for us to fix it, because this is going to affect generations beyond you and generations beyond me. And so just stalling it, right? Even if it is just like an efficiency issue with fossil fuels because of how inefficient and how to produce and how fossil fuels and exchanging of fossil fuels has been the precipice of a lot of war throughout history, throughout American history at least, we need to move away from this for political reasons and for environmental reasons, for both at the same time. But we can't do that if we're not on the same page. You know, so.
You and I would have to disagree about our interpretation of the data on the UAH temperature database,
and that's the point that Connor just made is really the point that, you know, that we've been fighting and people have been fighting to say that, you know, there are two sides to this coin, and for you and those on your side to say that this is not real, it's where we run into the issues. Because when you say it's not real, that's absolutism. And you can't prove that it's absolute. That it has a cause.
Well, let's see. You know, the my response to that would be this. I think what one has to do is to look at the science. And when you look at, if you look at the, again, Connor has got the UAH database graph in front of him. You see global cooling from 1970. You see two things, and I use that graph, of course, in my book. And I said you can conclude two things about it. The data's variable, and 40 years is too short a time frame to infer a long-term trend. But the thing about it is, how can one justify the hypothesis that CO2 causes global warming when CO2 increased from 1979 to 1998 by the largest increment, and we had global cooling in the troposphere? And so,
but it says on the graph that there's global warming. Like it says,
Connor, let him finish his point.
Well,
go ahead.
You know, we'd be all day today.
Right.
The point here is this: is that even with all of that, you know, I won't get into the concept of measurement margin of error and so forth. But the point here is that it's not been statistically significant. And so, and by the way, you ask about the average temperature of the Earth. There is no average temperature of the Earth. And the reason is that temperature is a proxy for the average kinetic energy of molecules in a system. So trying to average temperature, regardless of the technique, and the IPCC uses a more sophisticated technique than I'm going to describe, but trying to add the temperatures of various locales around the world and divide them by the number of data points and come up with an average is a meaningless analytical concept in science. The Earth has no average temperature. The temperature of the Earth is different at every point in time and space. And so that's one of the difficulties that climate scientists who promote the global warming hypothesis have is trying to somehow reconcile the idea that you've got 2 watts per meter squared of downwelling infrared radiation coming back from the CO2 in the atmosphere, and it doesn't. How do you calculate the impact on the Earth's temperature when the temperature of the Earth is different at every point in time and space?
So
there are just a lot of flaws in the scientific process that you use to derive this hypothesis.
So hold on, Guy. Let's go to the phone lines. Dave from Mequon.
Okay.
Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Good morning, Earl. I agree with your guest on pretty much everything that you're saying. I would add this, and people forget this. Most of the records, heat records that have been set in the United States were in the Dust Bowl years in the 1930s, when CO2 levels were much lower. And if you look even further back, go back further in time, Russia back in 1921 and 1922 had a huge drought and ended up killing millions of people. And if you look in 1931, China had a tremendous, huge flood that wiped out hundreds of thousands of people. So the historical point is, and it, like, I remember my grandparents because they were born at the turn of the century. And one of them lived in New York, and they told me about, you know, July in 1911. And there were literally people dying all over the place in New York City. Now, granted, they didn't have air conditioning, but environmentalists are pushing against air conditioning. But if you don't have air conditioning, people are going to die of heat. And so I would just add that we have
Dave, hang on. We've got to go to a break.
Sure.
Guy, can you hang on one more time?
Sure.
All right. Okay. So got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We've got Mr. Guy Mitchell on, and he is the author of Global Warming, The Great Deception. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Guy Mitchell, and he's written a book, The Great Global Warming, The Great Deception. Dave, you were saying, Dave from Mequon, quickly.
In that same year in 1911, you can look this up. France had over 41,000 people die from the heat in that summer in 1911. And NASA recently just came out with a report, I think within the last year or two, showing that with higher CO2 levels, actually the Earth is getting a little bit greener. And food production has gone up exponentially, which is actually a good thing. And matter of fact, one could argue having a little extra CO2 has been beneficial in the fact that if you look at the oceans, which have a much greater concentration of CO2, the biodiversity is much greater when you do have higher levels of CO2. How do we know this? Look at when we build greenhouses to grow food. And there's a reason for that, because the food grows quicker, gets and it ripens quicker, and everything else. So there is a plus to have a little more CO2, and it does not correlate to your guess. Based on the fact, when I look at what's happened historically with the Dust Bowl years and other earlier part in the century, even in the 1800s, and if you even go back further in time, the temperature has vacillated quite a bit throughout that period of time, even with lower CO2s. And now that we have higher CO2, the same thing.
All right, Dave. Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, and so to respond to Dave, I just I looked up the your statement about ocean biodiversity. It says on Stanford's website, ocean biodiversity increases exponentially with sea surface temperature up to about 20 to 25 Celsius. But then it says beyond that threshold, biodiversity drops off due to the limits of aerobic metabolism. So, I mean, if theoretically speaking, if climate change, if there's a larger number of CO2 in the atmosphere and that would increase temperature, it would reach a certain point where it actually negatively affect the oceans, because past 25 Celsius, it negatively affects the biodiversity in oceans. And so, looking at the graph that we had looked at earlier from University of Alabama in Huntsville, it's saying that, I mean, it's saying that global warming, or at least the temperature, temperature of the troposphere is increasing. And so that's all I would want to say in response to that.
So, Guy, what would you suggest when we see with our eyes aren't lying to us? Those of us who've been around a while, we know there's something happening, something that is very serious and must be addressed. And the nations of the earth, for the majority of them, agree that these things, not that Joe Biden himself is the arbiter of saying that there's global warming. He's not saying that alone.
And one more thing, I went to science.org, which is a reference from the NASA chart that I had referenced earlier. And this is a study with tons of other references, and it says that the IPCC or IPCC isn't alone in its conclusions. Greenhouse gases are accumulating in Earth's atmosphere as a result of human activities, causing surface air temperatures and subsurface ocean temperatures to rise. The American Meteorological Society, Geophysical Union, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science also have issued statements about this. What do you think is their intention behind doing this? If it is something that is fraudulent, why would these organizations referenced here, right? And it also includes a statement that this hypothesis was tested by analyzing 928 separate abstracts.
So Connor, let's let Guy respond. Guy?
It's all about the money, Connor. If you want to understand the motive behind promoting the global warming, the fraudulent global warming hypothesis, it's all about the money. In 2004, when former Vice President Al Gore and a partner from Goldman Sachs named David Blood formed Generational Investment Management in London, England, the worldwide carbon trading market had a value of $10 billion. In 2019, the worldwide market for carbon trading was $210 billion. At the end of 2021, it was around $800 billion. So if you want to understand why people are promoting this fraudulent hypothesis, you can follow the money.
Carbon.
That's what it's all about.
Are you saying that fossil fuel is not about the money?
I'm saying that. I think the issue, unfortunately, has transformed from a matter of science to a matter of politics. Look what's happening in Europe right now. You want to know what less fossil fuel consumption looks like? 2 days ago, the EU theoretically agreed to try to cut gas consumption by 15%. And a couple of the recommendations that they were making was, well, let's set our air conditioners at 77 degrees in the summer and 64 degrees or something like that in the winter. I got news for you. In 2021, 60% of the electricity generated in the United States was generated from fossil fuel plants, from gas and coal-fired plants, 20% from nuclear, 20% from alternative energy sources, 13% of which were wind and solar, and 7% hydroelectric. So even if you said we want to eliminate fossil fuel combustion and electric power plants, it would take decades to do it. So, and the reason is you can't replace. And by the way, What happens when the wind doesn't blow, which they've had problems with in Europe, and clouds obscure sunshine? Your alternative energy sources like wind and solar are not reliable.
Yeah, but fossil fuel has a limited time. You're going to eventually run out of fossil fuels. You're not arguing that point.
Well, no. I mean, everything's finite, including you and my life, and I'm older than you are.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. I'm not an opponent of the employment of economic, efficient sources of energy. We haven't even talked about nuclear. France generates over 80% of its electricity and has for 40 years from nuclear power plants. And the last nuclear power plant to be approved in the United States was in 2012, and it had been 30 years since one had been approved before that. So, you know, we just need to be sensible about our energy policy. There's fossil fuels do not cause global warming. Now, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't try to develop alternative energy sources.
But again, guy, that's your opinion.
I mean, that's
of
not
course
even,
it is. And, yeah. and,
that's not
and by the way,
it's just not it, evidenced through any of the evidence that I've pulled up here, through anything in which you've said. It's just not
Connor,
true.
I hate to tell you this, but NASA, every organization you quoted depends on government funding for their existence.
I mean, every single person that's alive depends on funding and has objectives. Like, even from your perspective, right, there are tons of conservative think tanks that have been created
I
in the past 100 or so years.
$1. Right? I didn't receive $1 of financial support from any outside source.
Yeah, but you receive money from people purchasing
and writing
your book, though. That's the thing.
Oh, listen, let me tell you something. When I wrote this book, my objective was not to make any money, and so far I'm right on budget. I'm not going to make any money.
How do you not make...
I've had to self-publish it. You're not going to get anybody. You're going to get a major publishing house to go against the consensus? No way. I mean, and that's part of the problem is, you know, people have drunk the Kool-Aid and they will not look at the science.
No,
they won't look at the temperature databases. You look at it and see one set of facts and I see another one, and that is it's been 0.013 degrees centigrade per year, which is in the within the measurement margin of error, and so there's enough ignorance to spread around here.
Yeah, but that's simply not true. Like in the graph itself, it says 2016 0.
You're not looking.
Celsius.
You're not reading the graph right, buddy. Look at
the temperature of the troposphere in 2016.
So hold that thought, Connor. Hey guy, I want to thank you for two things. Number one, for showing up, having this conversation with our listening audience, a great debate, and also for having, the intestinal fortitude to have a dialogue and a conversation. Most people don't. And you've been more than cordial in the conversation. I want to thank you. We'll extend the invitation to you again soon.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Earl, and I appreciate it. And I understand there's a diversity of opinion. If you want to read The Other Side by Global Warming, The Great Deception, it's on Amazon.com in either ebook or paperback. And hopefully, if we can get it figured out, on the hardcover.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, man. Great conversation.
All right, Earl.
All right,
have a good
thank
day.
You. Connor, the brilliant Connor. The scientist,
no.
Man, just brilliant, Connor, and great, man. I tell people about how brilliant you are, and you just, anybody who was listening, just realize that, man. Thank you, as always. Could not do the show without you. You're a great addition to this program, to this radio station.